is to lead the discussion.
Thank you. Good evening. For those of you who don't know, because there are several new commissioners since the last time I was here, it has been 2 years. My name's Jeff Fassel. I'm the city engineer for Springfield. And tonight, we're going to go over the 2018-2022 CIP Capital Improvement Program, or as we typically just call it around the office, the CIP. My goal tonight is to kind of review the document itself, what the document is, the process we go through for updating it, highlight some of the changes, and then obviously let you ask any questions you may have. Understanding it's a large document, so it's new to some of you. This is the first time you've probably seen it. For those of you who have seen it several times, see what you notice is it doesn't change a lot, even though it's a large document. A lot of the projects stay in the CIP for a long time, and that's one of the reasons we move to updating it every 2 years, because it is pretty staff intensive as far as getting the updates done and getting through the process. And so when things don't really change a lot, it's and we can push it out over a couple years. It just saves us on time and helps us prepare the budget and get other things done. So with that, so updating the CIP, as I said, the CIP is updated every 2 years. This is the second update we've done since we switched to that, so it's been kind of nice other than coming in and going, oh, it's time to update the CIP again. But it's a pleasure to be here and discuss the CIP, and we've actually accomplished a lot from the previous CIP. So if you were to go pull up the old CIP and look, there's a lot of things that have been removed. I'll try and highlight some of those things, and I think some are highlighted in the memo. The CIP is a planning document. So what it does for us is we take all the master plans and other plans that we have, and we kind of funnel that down into a five-year plan. And what we try to do, what we're really doing, is matching what we anticipate for revenues through the next 5 years, so future revenues in a planning phase, and match those with foreseeable projects or activities that we think need to be done over the next 5 years. And then what that all then goes into the capital budget to formulate the capital budget on an annual basis. So really it's a planning document to help us forecast our needs, forecast our revenues, and match those with projects. Like I said, it can be pretty intensive, staff intensive. It's a 4 to 6 month process. Sometimes I have the document ready, but like this year, I can't really get in front of council on a work session until April. So I'm here in February, so I'll have a few weeks of time, which I usually go through and read. And I was reading here, and I already found a few typos and edits to fix and things like that. So it is a pretty intensive process, 6 months. We start in October. We usually post and seek out projects, not only from internal staff, but citizens and outside agencies. So we're always soliciting for projects. On top of that, I go through and I review master plans to see what is on the upcoming year. So all of our 20-year master plans, I go through and look and see where we're at and see what the next projects that need to enter the CIP. So those 20, what would be now the 2021 and 2022 projects, I'd be writing up sheets for those and adding those sheets. This year, we did not receive any projects from outside citizens or outside agencies. One thing is I do throughout the year collect them, but what happens is the citizens typically call, they want paving projects. That's usually what the citizens want because that's what they can see. Sometimes it's flooding projects or stormwater type projects. Rarely is it a wastewater project, because we usually hear about those when they have backups and we find those, but it, usually with underground pipes, if they don't see it, they don't really know there's a problem. It's usually find those through operations and our asset management tools. So typically we get paving requests or sidewalk requests or just improvements. And so the way our code is written, those are really the responsibility of the abutting. If they're not urban standard roads, those are the responsibility of the abutting property owners. So I walk them through the LID process. And sometimes I've had citizens take the initiative to go out and try and get signatures to start a LID or local improvement district, but a lot of times they kind of die right there, because it is a difficult process when you're asking your neighbors to pay for their share of the project, and the projects aren't cheap. So So this year I did not receive any of those. I did not receive any from outside agencies. I am working with Sub because I have Sub's 10-year plan, so I'm trying to line that up with some of our projects. But what we were really trying to do was, in the event, if we were successful with the gas tax, we were planning a lot of paving projects. So we're going to try and line up any of Sub's water line replacements with our pavement projects, so that we weren't having them go through and cut the street up after we paved it. So we're just trying to coordinate that. Now I'm mostly in a coordination process with future sewer projects and looking at their 10-year CIP. And then ultimately, the CIP is adopted by council in March or April. This year it'll be sometime near the end of April. The capital budget is already entered, so we're already in the middle of our budget process. So the capital budget's already been based on the first 2 years, even though we haven't adopted. And there have been times when we've gone back and we've had to change the capital budget, which we do have that opportunity because the budget isn't adopted until June. Doesn't go through budget committee until May. So there are opportunities to amend should we need to, or change. And then we have on rare occasions had to do that. But typically, like I said, because the CIP is static, a lot of times it's usually a council request or something like that, and we get the project in there, and then we'll go back and amend the CIP if we need to, if we feel we need to. But with the 2-year adoption, we've kind of looked at the statutes and all of that, and we feel we're comfortable with, if we adopt, if we change the budget, that those supplemental budgets can be treated as amendments to the CIP. If they're large projects, we'll go back and do an official amendment. An example of that would be, a few years back, we amended to add a fire station into fire station remodel, or a new fire station into the CIP. And one of the reasons for that is a lot of grant funds require, or you score higher if your project is identified in a facilities needs plan or some sort of planning document. CIP counts for that, so we rushed an amendment through to get the fire station into the CIP so they could put that onto the grant application. So that's another reason why if you look through, you see a lot of unfunded projects. A lot of those projects are in there for seeking either to give us the opportunity for certain types of grant funds or things like that out there. So CIP, when we look at projects, the projects typically have to meet certain criteria to be put in the CIP or to rate high enough for us to put capital dollars towards them. Examples are like sanitary sewer rehabilitation projects. They are regulatory because we have a zero tolerance for SSOs, or sanitary sewer overflows. So obviously no raw sewage flowing out of the pipes into the streets, into the streams. And so we have I-9 problems. And so through our program, we go through and we rehab old pipes to tighten them up, to make them watertight, so that meets our regulatory, and it's also preservation activity to go through and repair those pipes. We have ADA transition project, which you'll see in there, and we have ADA regulations, Americans with Disabilities Act, and so we have a requirement within the public right-of-way to make sure that we provide access to everyone. And so we have to go through, one of the projects we'll be working on this summer is going through and doing an inventory of our curb ramps. Where do we have ramps? Where don't we have ramps? And do the ramps meet the current standards? And then we've identified priority areas, and then the next thing we'll be trying to identify funding as we move along to repair those ramps or replace those ramps, and in some case add ramps. So that's a regular example of regulatory project. The Milray Stormwater Facility, which we just completed over here, that's a regulatory project for water quality, and also is in our long-range planning, or was in our long-range plans. And then we have Franklin Boulevard, which is a council priority, and also in a long-range plan. So those are just some examples of projects and how we kind of rate those and look at the criteria. As you look through the CIP to try and organize it, we organize it into five categories or five systems. We have stormwater, transportation, wastewater, building facilities, and miscellaneous. And the reason we have miscellaneous is we have some pots of money where it kind of covers several different systems like we have money in there for city participation, and what that is participation in private development projects to either oversize the pipe for future development beyond whatever the developer is proposing, or to extend beyond the property to serve future properties to stimulate or assist future growth, rather than have them just build what they need at that point in time and then come back and figure out how to fix something after the built environment is there or adds to the system. And so, like I said, so within all of those, you see projects that we have, various projects that are either in process, projects that we're working on, like Franklin Boulevard, projects that were in the planning phase, which we're just starting or just currently budgeting. Some examples of those would be, we just put in the Irving Slough project, which is a water quality headwaters project, and also a facility, because right now we don't have a facility in there. If there was a spill out there in that industrial, we don't know if we could stop that spill before it reached Gateway. So looking at what do we need to do so that if something occurred out there near IP, how do we isolate it before it gets into the full system so we can start cleanup. So that's a project that we just initiated. And then you have future projects where we may have partial funding identified. Some of that partial funding is set aside to potentially leverage other grants. You see that a lot on the transportation projects, Gateway Beltline. We're kind of setting aside improvement SDCs. And improvement SDCs can't be used typically to fully fund a project, only for the growth portion of that project, but we can use that money to leverage other dollars, so grant funding, federal funds typically, to get projects done. And you'll see that a lot on the transportation side, because we don't have a lot of street capital or transportation funding available. So we use our money to try and leverage other dollars to get projects done and stretch our dollar farther. And then projects are classified into several categories, and there's all of these categories exist. The photo there is of a water quality manhole that we put in out at 10th and Quinault area. So we have all different kinds. Stormwater kind of has the most, with the repair, preservation, water quality, flood control, expansion. And a lot of what we really try to focus our dollars on is preservation and maintenance of our current assets, because we have a lot of, if you will, our assets are worth a lot, and we try to maintain those, because if we were to have to replace everything, it's very expensive, and so maintenance is cheaper in the long run. So our direction really from council is to focus as much as we can towards preservation of our current asset structure. And then I have a chart here which kind of shows the proposed spending over the next, well, this shows 6 years, but it's FY17 is the current budget year, and FY18 through FY22 would be the planning year. So we're currently in the process of programming for the current FY18 budget. And so one thing when you see this, you see, wow, all those dollars are way up here in FY17, and that's kind of gets to the nature of capital projects. Our capital budget's a one-year plan or program, but typically projects, our large projects, take 3 or more years. The Millrace project took us about 5 years to get from just planning phase to where we are today with ultimate completion. So that's why, so a lot of those dollars will program, and then you'll see them in that first year where we keep moving that more money forward, because we may not have spent all of the money programmed. The other thing you'll notice is, in some ways, our stormwater and wastewater doesn't look like we're spending as much, or our spending's dropping, and some of that is we're due to update our master plans. On the wastewater side, when we sold bonds, which is now going on 10 years, 9 years ago, we have accomplished nearly all of the preservation and upgrade work. So anything that was identified to upgrade the system for potential sanitary sewer overflows has been done. All that's really left that's identified in the wastewater master plan is expansion projects, so for future growth. And so one with the 2030 plan and other things, we're due to go through and do a major planning effort, which we are right now working on an agreement with Eugene to have their hydraulic modeler work on our system, and we're gonna start modeling this, our wastewater system, and getting that going so that we can get towards updating our plan. And so we'll start that work this summer, and it'll continue through next year. Some hot priorities as far as stormwater. We just finished the Channel 6 master plan last year, and then this summer we applied for a letter of map revision there. So we have gone through and we've updated the flood insurance rate maps, and in essence we have better data now, so we have a firm handle on where the floodplain is. And so before we can really do any of the identified projects through the master plan that we completed, we need to do a flood insurance rate map update. So that was submitted in August. So I'm hoping before a year's time's up, we'll hear back from FEMA with some sort of direction on where we are, whether they accept our letter of map revision or we have to go through and do a different process. And then we'll initiate those projects. And then we have several channels that just need to be improved for water quality and conveyance of systems and flood control and things like that. And so we've been setting money aside to go work on those. A few examples are the 72nd Street channel and the Q Street channel. We have some work to do in there. And then we are working on several big projects which are in the process. We have the over-under channel, which is one of our main stormwater conveyance systems through downtown. And that project, there's a contract out right now. The contract's on hold through the winter because the channel carries water year round, and so you can't work on it this time of year. If you drive by the park at G Street at Willamette Lane, that channel that goes through there, that's part of the system. So that channel doesn't always have water in it, but now it's about half full last time I went through. So those are our stormwater priorities. Our wastewater priority is our CMOM program, or our capacity maintenance operation and management program, which is replaces our wet weather program, which is our infill and infiltration. So it's removing that water that seeps into the line. So the goal is our plant's been upgraded, the wastewater plant has been upgraded to handle a certain amount of flow daily. And the goal is to reduce the amount of storm water going to the plant, so we're not treating quote unquote clean water. We're only treating wastewater. And so we don't really, it cost us $200 million to recently upgrade the plant to get here there, so it's just kind of cheaper to tighten our system rather than go through and do another big plant upgrade if we were to continue to send more flow there.
You mind my asking how they get? Because I would have thought that they were just completely separate piping systems.
They are. So what happens is the storm pipes, there's a lot of concrete pipe in our wastewater system. And so even though they're gasketed and everything, a lot of those pipes, some of them are been put in since 1950, 1945, and they just get cracks, they get holes, root intrusion and things like that. So the storm water, when we all have high groundwater in the valley, and so this time of year when the groundwater is really high, the water just gets in to those storm pipes. Matt Stouter just told us, he's the ESD manager, that they were running at about 170 million gallons a day during this last storm. Our summer flow is 20 million gallons a day. And so our population doesn't change that much. That's obviously storm water getting into the system. So yes, we do have separate systems, but the pipes are not tight. So, and like I said, it's cheaper to rehab the existing conveyance system than it is to go and upgrade the system to handle more water, the plant system. Transportation projects, if you go through and you were to review the previous CIP, been doing a lot of cleanup work with our traffic division and removing items that were in the CIP that could be viewed more as maintenance and operation activities and moving those to the operations budget and out of the CIP. The other thing is we have our capital investment. We're working on Franklin Boulevard. Obviously, that's our big project. And then we have Virginia Daisy, which we'll be getting going on this year and probably be constructed. Hope will be under construction next year. Those are kind of our two big priorities, and how we're able to do those is through grant funds.
with a little bit of capital dollars and systems development charges dollars to supplement. And then buildings and facilities, we're currently finishing our seismic retrofits to City Hall. They're underway right now. And then we always have a small pot of money and then just miscellaneous buildings and facilities upgrades to Boot Kelly, to City Hall, fire stations, and other buildings that the city owns. Looking ahead, I didn't change this slide from last time because it's pretty much status quo. The one thing I did change is the transportation funding need. We're at about a $5 million need to just maintain our current system. And that's setting aside, everybody probably recalls through the gas tax initiative, we talk about a backlog of projects we need to get to. That $5 million need is just setting aside that 30 plus million or whatever it is backlog and just saying if we were to go forward from here and maintain our system so we weren't creating a deeper hole, we need about $5 million annually to maintain the street system, traffic lights, signals, things like that. And the other thing to note is building and maintenance preservation funding is about $1 million a year. We have big projects that are coming due. The roof is about 12 years old on this building, so you can imagine that in about 6 to 7 years, it's going to be due for replacement or some sort of preservation. The HVAC system is about 25 years old, and there's, I think, 65 or 68 units on top of the building. So, and they go out there. We lose about 2 a year, it seems like. They're just at that age where their expected life is done, and so we're just in that time frame where they just need to be replaced. But on a positive note, when I go through and look at revenues, our SDC revenues have really picked up. I mean, before we were kind of on a steady climb, we saw a large jump in SDC revenues that can be attributed to the hospital upgrades, and we've had some other big commercial projects, and so that's a positive sign from where we were a few years ago, where we were pretty much flat to nothing in SDC revenue. So we are able to go out and put some dollars into the system, either for growth through our improvement SDCs, or just in general through our reimbursement SDCs. With that, I have any questions? And that's before, I think that was October, so before the grand opening, but that's the Millrace stormwater facility with the trailhead, so.
How's it handling the rainstorms? Is it pretty stabilized?
Yeah, I haven't been out there to check the I was hoping because we had some warm weather up through November that the seed would have taken hold a little better. So we will probably have some cleanup work to do here this spring. I haven't been out there recently to check and see if we've been having major erosion issues. We did have early in the fall some erosion issues with those first few storms and the snowstorms, which is to be expected. But again, I was really hoping we did get it seeded in about October. Over right there, that's hydro seeded. I was hoping we did have some warm days in November that we would get better germination, but it just didn't occur.
Yeah. So. There's been a couple of places on it that have standing water during the heavy.
These have been some pretty good storms.
On the path, it's just because there's various places where there's not good rain.
I haven't actually been on that whole stretch of path since it's been paved, so I haven't seen how the paving and I didn't really review the path that was a landmine portion of the project, but I haven't been on it since it's been paved. The last time I was on it was still gravel.
Any questions? Sure.
Has the city council talked at all about, since the gas tax didn't pass, about what the direction is on that?
We haven't had a conversation with the council yet. I guess you can say we're kind of in a regrouping mode, and we're actually now lobbying the state, and the state's been going around, and they're anticipating that they're going to do something in this legislative session for some sort of transportation package, and so really working that side of things. And then again, reviewing, I mean, we're going to get some what is it, CMAQ dollars, it's air quality dollars from ODOT, and so we're in line to get some of that money. So we're in the process. The applications aren't out yet, but we're reviewing projects that would meet those requirements and looking to submit for those. So trying to find any sort of federal or state dollars that we can apply for. But yeah, as far as a new revenue source, we haven't really sat down and decided what our next step is.
Considering that you've indicated that the budget picture is brightening somewhat, and when finance was before the city council on the work session, previewing the budget cycle and saying that incrementally things are getting a little bit better budget-wise, does that really translate overall to the backlog that you have, other than street maintenance, which is a big problem? Are you maintaining a level, or are you increasing the backlog of projects? Are you able to break even, do you think, or are you still fighting just to...
So I go back on, when I look at the capital, and I do manage the whole spectrum, when I break that, if you look at how the CIP is broken into systems, the stormwater and wastewater system we're doing very well on. Now, part of that is we went out and sold bonds. 2009, we sold wastewater bonds because we had a order, direct order from EPA to go complete some rehabilitation work. And when we sold those bonds, it was right when we entered the recession. And contractors, a lot of other projects, development work was drying up. So we were fortunate that we had really, really good bids on a lot of work. And so we got, I'd have to go dig the numbers up, but I recall thinking we got about 80,000 linear feet of pipe rehabbed with those dollars, on top of getting the Franklin Boulevard project completed and the Jasper Datron sewer in. I don't have the numbers, it was in the last budget memo, but when we only anticipated getting one phase of Jasper Natron and about 40,000 linear feet of pipe rehab. So this wastewater system, now we're in a stable state where we're able to keep up on any work that we need to get done. The revenues are there on the user fee side of things, and we're able to, we don't have a backlog of work in the wastewater system. Stormwater systems in a similar state. It's not as, I would not classify it as healthy as the wastewater, but we are not in a mode where we have a backlog of work. Some of the things with the way a stormwater, like the 5 years it takes us to get a project out like that, there's a lot more permitting issues with stormwater work, with just DEQ, the Corps of Engineers, Army engineers and things like that. So there's just a lot of permitting you have to go through because you're typically discharging water directly to a state water body or a federal water body. And so it just takes us longer to get that work sometimes out the door and into construction phase. Buildings and facilities, we do have a backlog of work. We've only, out of the million, we've been dedicating about $250,000 a year. We've been getting small projects done. We've been keeping the system on top of the roof functioning, but it is due to be replaced, estimated at about $1.5 million project. And you know, we have the roof coming up right now. It doesn't leak on a regular basis, so that's a good thing. Partly why we're doing the seismic work the way we are, rather than the recommended, which was to come through the top, because the roof doesn't leak. And when we first had it replaced, it leaked fairly. It leaked a lot. and so, in fact, we had to pull a warranty. They replaced it again under warranty because it just wasn't a good job. And then streets, obviously. Some of the issues we have is the money we can go get isn't always just for straight preservation on like local streets. It has to be a street that meets a certain criteria to score well on the grants. And so sometimes I do get questions from citizens. Thurston Road was a classic example when we did the paving out there. Why aren't you paving that section when this section's worse? Well, this section doesn't qualify for the grant funds. And so in order, not that it didn't need the project that we were doing, it just, if you were looking at the face of it, it wasn't the worst or highest needs section. And so we have to evaluate the projects that we do go for on how well they'll score for the money. on the criteria so that we can be competitive for the dollars. So with some of the state funding or state funding packages in the grant funds, it has to be targeted at specific projects. So, but as far as creating backlog, yeah, our backlog will continue to grow in the street fund until we figure out how to identify a source for preservation.
One of the things in previous years, listening to the presentation on the CIP, it's always been a case in the past that, well, we've completed three projects, but we just added four. And so it's kind of like, well, we're spinning our wheels at best just to break even.
Yep. Well, you know, as an example, when we were doing a robust street seal, slurry seal, which is what we typically do for preservation on local streets, we were doing about 5 to 6 miles a year of local streets. When we did a couple projects a couple years back, and we were able to get a total through two projects about 3 miles done, I had the numbers on what that percentage of the local street network was, and it was less than 1% of the street network. And before, when we were on an annual rotation, and we figured that each street should be slurry sealed about every 8 years. That's about how long that treatment lasts to seal it and keep the water up. And when we, about 2004, we were on that cycle where we were hitting almost every local street about every 8 years, doing about 4 to 5 miles or more every year. So yeah, doing 1% after not having a program for 10 years just is kind of a drop in the bucket of not even helping you keep up.
Yeah, missing the potholes these days is getting a little harder.
This winter has been rough, and that's one thing. We were fortunate the previous 2 years we had light winters, not a lot of freeze-thaw, not a lot of water. This year, every time I walk in from where I park out in the neighborhood, I just look at the intersections and I cringe after every rainstorm and every, it's just exacerbating the problem. So this was not a good winter to have when we weren't going to have any major overlay projects.
Of course, the people that are driving on those streets should realize why that is when they turn down an opportunity to make improvements.
Further questions, Troy?
I don't have any questions, actually. Okay.
Well, I've got, of course, as usual, my commissioner will tell you I've got quite a list. But if it'd be okay, I'd like to email you the questions because a lot of them are really project specific. But one of them, when I was hearing you talk about the flood insurance updates, mm-hmm. I also read in the CIP that I think very admirably we're updating our topographic base maps. Mm-hmm. Using LIDAR, mm-hmm. which as a surveyor, you know, that's really top of the line and definitely sounds like it needs to be done. But potentially would the LIDAR and topo updates affect the flood insurance maps? And if so, should the LIDAR and topo updates be done before the flood insurance?
I don't think so, because it's a different process. We actually have to submit for the rate map update. So we went and surveyed cross sections of the channel, and that is to update the rate map. You might be able to use that data, depending on how accurate it was, to initiate the process for an update. But we have to initiate that process. So just by updating the rate map or updating the topo maps does not initiate a flood insurance rate map update. And it's a process. We submitted to FEMA in August, and I still haven't. All I've been getting back is requests for more data. So
I've got a couple of questions on the Glenwood Riverside path mm-hmm. that's on the project list. One of the things that's both in the Glenwood Refiner Plan Phase 1 and in the TSP was the hopeful eastern terminus of that pathway would have been a bridge across the river to Island Park. Although, in talking to transportation recently, it sounds like there's a very good chance that won't happen at all. So under those circumstances, and this may be a transportation question rather than a question for you,
what would be the planned eastern terminus of that pathway without a bridge?
There are options, design options. I mean, there's options for cantilevering a path off the side of the existing bridges. So there's options of looking at the existing bridges. So I wouldn't say that we would have to have the path come across in the roadway. So, but getting a new bridge is difficult at best.
Well, it sounds like
that's being
put more and more unlikely. It sounds
yeah.
like it's time to
and it's along. A long it's a long crossing too. So it's not a short bridge either. So having looked at the distance, but there are other options for getting across the river as far as using the existing facility. So I never like to say it's a foregone conclusion that the path will just terminate there. It may continue up the river on that side, and maybe we cross somewhere farther up the river as well, instead of at Island Park.
The other question on that I have is, it's been my understanding that street side pathways, such as Virginia and Daisy, are the responsibility of the city, and then off-street paths are the responsibility of Willamalane. However, this path is in the CIP. Is that, and I'm speculating, is that because a lot of the property is not in the city limits?
I think we put it in the CIP to get it initiated with the Glenwood as a priority of council. We're in negotiations that when that path's built, it'll probably be a team effort with Willamalane, and Willamalane will ultimately own the park. It'll be a linear park along there when that path is built. So ultimately the path will be Willamalane's. We've had those agreements on other paths that are not on the street where we work. EWEB is one where we work with EWEB and Willamalane and Sub and the city as far as how we structured that agreement. But ultimately it will be a linear path owned and maintained by Willamalane, with the city probably helping to facilitate if we have to initiate NEPA work. The other reason is we applied for, we currently have approximately $750,000 in federal surface transportation plan funds to initiate NEPA should we choose to go that route. And that was another reason for including it in the CIP. But yeah, ultimately it would be a Willamalane facility when all is said and done. How that plays out is not yet written.
There aren't many others.
But it would just be, much like the parks, if you look in there, not just setting aside the path, but the stormwater parks ultimately, those are planned to be Willamalane parks if you look at the Glenwood Refinement Plan.
Thanks. Yeah, that's more of your questions, Mike. We got time.
I guess so.
Test my knowledge. If you give me time, if you send them to me at my desk, then I have time to think of the answers.
thinking about revenues, we are probably projecting that SDCs may drop in the future, or are we budgeting the idea that SDCs will be steady or increase?
Budgeting on a steady increase. I would say not where we were 10, 12 years ago, where we were seeing double-digit percentage increases, but more of a 3-4% moderate. Mm-hmm. This last year we saw a fairly large jump when I looked at we're at 6 months into our budget year, and on some of our SDCs we've already collected more revenue than we projected. Mm-hmm. So, but it's really difficult to project SDC revenues because it really is a project-by-project case. I mean, depending on what development comes in the door kind of dictates what your revenue is. So it's not like user fees where you kind of know what your user base is and you know what your percentage you're collecting and what the estimated flows are. It really is a project-by-project basis, so it's kind of one of those tricky things to project.
Yeah, I was thinking along the line of like business cycles, and I think our real estate professionals can tell us that they're probably expecting some downturn in real estate development in the future, near future.
Yeah, I mean, seems like I people always keep asking us that same question, and it seems like this year was supposed to turn down, but it seems like it's tracking upwards still. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So would have been my prediction at the beginning of the year, but. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've had interest rates at just historic lows for just a long time now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they've gone up a point over the last year, and I still think we're still seeing a little bit of growth. So if anything, I think leveling out, but I don't think many people see it going the other way anytime soon.
People are still growing because they're worried that the interest rates are going to go further, so they're trying to buy now, finance now.
Oh, yeah.
And then, of course, also this might be a better question for, like, the legislators, but is there any chance that there might be an adjustment in the weight miles for preservation? Because they're obviously the big damagers of at least arterials.
I don't know what's in the proposals yet. Waiting to see.
Do we have
meetings? I think they're having, the Ways and Means is having a meeting this weekend, I think.
Saturday. LCC.
And that's one of the topics of discussion is transportation packages.
Now, Lee Beyer has said that he's interested in revenue, in increasing revenue, and it also sounded as if he was talking about sharing with the cities.
Well, it would, any sort of increase, if it was gas tax, we would see our revenues increase because we get whatever, a statutory apportionment, so we would see some increase there. Mm-hmm. And then however they structure it through what state funds they send out for various projects. But we would see our general revenues go up from the gas tax because we do get an apportionment from those and registrations.
And the state package would come with a preemption on no local gas taxes for the next 5 years or something because of the share.
Potential problem. That's what they did. And when we went out for the gas tax, I mean, there was a preemption for 3 years, I believe, after the last increase, 2011, I think.
Yeah.
And so there was a preemption on that. And that's why we had to wait for that window before we could go out for the most recent attempt.
You'd mentioned the benefit of getting additional SDCs from the hospital project. Was there any SDC benefit from Swanson? I know they got a lot of credits just as an incentive.
I haven't gone through to look and see where the various revenues, but that was one of the big projects. I'd have to go back. I could go back and see.
Well, I mean,
but I'm not sure of who and what paid. But a lot of theirs was existing use, so it probably didn't change and increase their SDCs. They didn't, if like stormwater, they didn't increase their footprint.
Well, I know they had some incentives too.
But they didn't change their use. They didn't, so it wasn't, didn't become a higher intense use. So I probably didn't change any of their SDC requirements.
I would think the Gateway Mall.
That was one.
Has probably been a significant increase.
Yeah. We've had some work out of Peace Health area too, with the memory care and some other facilities, and just some smaller. I had a list. I went to a presentation with a development group, and I had a list of the various projects that we had, and there were several, and there were several small. I mean, I think we were like just 11,000 feet of general retail and commercial space being built, and projects that were in the pipeline, and those are just the smaller projects, not like the hospital, which is a big major. We don't see those every year type of projects. And so we had a lot of those small projects and things like that.
I'm going to guess that you probably, it's too early to say, but is there any talk about any kind of revenue enhancement for transportation? Again, I mean, I have to tell you, I talked to a lot of neighbors and the word did not get out well at all.
Well, and that's good feedback because I attended and presented in a few community meetings. So that's good feedback to hear that we didn't get it out enough, evidently, or didn't target it the right way. But right now we haven't had any discussions about
The gas tax?
Yeah. I mean, people talk to me, you know, that there was this thing that said, well, we're just using, you know, robbing one pot to replace another.
If you looked at...
It was really quite well written.
I can't remember if there were 6 or 7 gas taxes on the ballots all around. All of them were dismantled. They were all defeated handedly. I don't think anyone's planning on revisiting it until legislature ends.
All the revenue packages, period, lost. I think Clackamas County had one, but the only one that's passed in the last year was Portland's 10 cents, and they had a sunset clause on theirs, a 10-year sunset clause.
A real interesting concept to pursue might be a variable gas tax that's based on the price of gasoline. So that, for instance, when we've had these tremendous decreases in the price of gas due to fracking, that we could increase the tax and it really wouldn't be felt. And then if the price went up seriously, that we could taper the tax back down again. But, you know, it's, that would require some, a lot of thought to set that up.
I think a lot of the success is going to depend on, you know, getting out to the people that this is just for roads, and, you know, it's just, we're going to fix potholes.
Even that, what was the license tax for the vehicles or whatever, that didn't even pass in Lake County.
And I was on the gas tax committee, and I spoke at everything that I could go to. I mean, we were at neighborhood watch meetings, we were at every public event. We raised as much money as we could, we did as many mailers as we could, and it was completely turned down. So I have a feeling that that is not going to be an option anymore. So
I understand. It's a little frustrating.
I think it's just the word gas tax, the idea of gas tax, I think it's a thing of the past for now, unless it happens at the state level and is legislated. I don't think you're going to see many ballot gas taxes, if any, personally, go through anytime soon.
General question on I&I. Is Springfield doing better than Eugene per capita, or do you know?
I don't know, and that's one of the things we'll be exploring when we start working on the new modeling effort, is to look at collect data on basins that we've rehabbed so we can see what the post-flow data is, because one of the problems we're looking at, and it's being experienced by all agencies or all wastewater management control facilities, is private laterals.
Oh, yeah.
And so if we tighten our system up, that groundwater just comes up, finds the next available hole in the system to get into the system. And so part of the discussion is, what do we do with a private lateral program? We can tighten our public system up, but how do we incentivize, how do we, you know, what do we have to do to get the private citizens to upgrade their system? We do still have quite a bit of what's called Orangeburg pipe in the ground, which is cardboard tar paper pipe, and it's been in the ground since World War II, and it's a lot of times all that's left is a mud tube or squished or gone, and so some of that wastewater is not getting into the system, it's just going into the ground, and then what's left of the pipe is conveying stormwater into the system. So
is the smoke testing still done as extensively as it was in the past? Because that certainly identified a lot of
We did, and I think we just did a smoke test. We just smoke tested some systems, and it still does identify a lot, but some of it's coming up with the policy of, you know, going to council and saying, what's our policy to either incentivize or notify residents that they need to repair their laterals, and what, you know, there's a lot of different models for systems out there of how they do that. There's penalty models where if you don't do it, we're going to do it and you're going to pay, or we just disconnect you and you can't. You know, that's a McMinnville system. There's incentive systems where you pay into, you know, part of your user fee goes to pay for repairs. And so there's those sorts of, or there's a pot of money that you can access until it's gone anyway. So there's a lot of different models, but it really boils down to a policy discussion. But in order to inform the policy discussion, we need to kind of have the data of how bad is the I&I problem from private laterals. And so we're going to kind of look at that. We've done a lot of rehab work, but we haven't gone and collected any data, post data, since completing that rehab work. And so that'll be interesting to get that data and see where we're at, see how did we improve our flows. But we know we still have a problem when we see what the flows, winter flows are at the plant. And the plant knows, they have a flow monitor where Springfield's flow enters the MWMC system, and so they can know, they know how much of it is Eugene's flow, how much of it's Springfield's flow, so they can tell us on a gross number, you know, where we're at. And typically in the gross numbers, we're not seeing enough of a return to say, oh yeah, we've cut 25%. You're just not seeing that much. But that leads us to believe that we still have quite a bit big problem in the private laterals.
The spaghetti network.
Yeah, and the complaints from folks that when we do tighten pipes that their backyards now flood. That happens because we removed the French drain. So.
Well, it's been a really good discussion. If there's no further questions, we could take a little break.
I'll be back in a couple weeks to have you approve it, to send on to council. And if you think of any questions in the meantime, feel free to either send them to me or have them ready when I get here.
Have you got a card, Jeff? I'm not sure. I have your direct email.
I don't think I have any cards on me. Brenda has my contact info.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm sending my contact info. But yeah, if you have any questions, I know it's a big document. But if you're on the Planning Commission in 2 years, when I come back, what you probably see is a lot of projects removed, hopefully. Less big. Yeah, you'll start seeing similar projects.
You hope less big, right?
Actually, it is down about 15 pages this year.
What percentage of pages is that, though?
How many pages?
Two? Well, it's not necessarily because
that was a cover page. Yeah.
We took out the appendix.
Okay, so the meeting's adjourned, reconvened in 7 minutes.
Yeah, there's a couple that I have. First of all, that's good.
You did good.